You know what that music means? Tim Hasselbeck's on the line. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. Now, Tim can appreciate this because he's got some, you know, those Boston roots.
He knows a few people up there.
He knows some people up there. Evidently, this station and these shows, this show, as well as our morning show, got some attention on WEEI this week.
Tim. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. First off, let's play the clip of one, them trolling our station and our shows, of what they thought the show was called.
Big time program of Darren and Donch.
Donch?
Darren and Donch.
Donch.
That's got to be short for something.
Took the Patriots behind the woodshed.
Was that, no, that was Darren talking, not Donch.
That was Darren, yeah.
Titans take New England behind the woodshed.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you what they did after that, but let's just say it was graphic.
Darren and Donch. D-A-U-N-I-C. I don't know. You help us. How do you get Donch from that?
Hey, it's wicked hard. It's wicked hard to learn phonetics when you're up there. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're trying to study. You got Oki and Sully. They're always talking to you about going to the Packy. And you know what I mean? It's sort of like Donick. You know, it's hard to say that.
And there's more clips. We won't bore you with all that, but we had fun with it earlier in the show. Steve was on. So this was, you know, Willie's been out of town all week.
What show was that up there? Because obviously they have a number of shows. What show was that up there?
That was their morning show. No? Mm-hmm.
Midday?
Midday? Midday show. Midday
well, Christian show. Christian Fourier is on, I think, on their midday show, I believe. And the morning show would be other guys. I used to do a hit with the morning show. Like, they have Brady on every week.
This was Keith and
yeah, they've
the
made
guys.
News with some Tom Brady interviews. Yeah.
Wait a second. Keith.
It was Dale and
show,
Keith.
Kirk and Callahan. That's who it is.
That's the morning show.
The morning show. Yeah.
Dale and Keith. Julian chimes in.
This is
oh,
that's
Dale
the show.
So
yeah.
Dale Holly. I don't know who Keith is. Dale Holly used to write for the Globe. Maybe still writes for the Globe.
But they played another clip because what they do, they just troll. They trolled the shows and then you know heard some of the promos
the teams that the Patriots play that week.
Well, no, this was afterwards. They're like, let's check into Nashville. I guess they do this maybe on a weekly
basis. See if
they're
trashing us the day after the game.
See what
they're
saying.
And then we'll trash them.
Yeah, about see what they're saying about us. And when Steve was talking, they thought that was Donch.
Yeah, I'm Donch.
That was Donch.
Yeah. What did you make of the trashing of what the Titans did? I mean, as I said right before you in the last segment, I don't think I've ever seen a Patriots team wave the white flag with 7.5 minutes to go, punch out and say and call it a day. We'll see you on the other side. And that's exactly what they did.
You know, the criticism of Brady up in New England, you know, having been there, you know, I was up that way, you know, being in Bristol, not from EEI, but from another station up there, was basically that, like, Brady looked disinterested. Like, that was the criticism that, you know, some of the guys up in New England on talk radio, you know, were talking about. And, you know, it's kind of hard to dispute it just based on, you know, how he looked kind of different than he normally looks when he plays. I mean, you know, normally he does such a good job of moving in the pocket, finding throwing lanes, hanging in there, and, you know, just gave himself up a bunch, which you've seen him do before, but I just don't think it's the, you know, the number of times in a single game that you saw him give himself up, you know, against the Titans on Sunday. So, you know, that was a little bit of the criticism that I heard from up there. And then quite honestly, when I was watching the game and I'm sitting right next to Adam Schefter watching the games, it was really just the two of us because the Monday night game was in San Francisco. So a lot of the guys from Sunday and Monday Countdown, they'd already left. And, you know, I said to him when Brian Hoyer came in the game, and I forget how much time was left.
Is that the midway point thought, in the fourth?
Yeah, like 7 minutes left in the fourth, right?
Yeah, that's what I said. It's about seven and a half. Yeah, that's when they waved the flag. They said, we're done. We're moving on.
Yeah, like I looked at Adam, and I'm like, can you ever remember this? And, you know, I think we both were shocked that we were seeing Brian Hoyer that early. Now, look, you can make the argument that, look, they weren't going to win the game. It was the right thing to do to protect your starting quarterback, sure. But that's just not how they typically do it. And so because of that, I thought that was surprising. Look, and when you look at it, Marcus was obviously very efficient. They gave, you know, that Patriots offense what seemed like all they could handle. Josh Gordon missed some opportunities. Brady missed some throws. You know, in terms of getting beat by somebody in a game that just didn't seem very competitive, you know, once, you know, I guess beyond halftime, that was surprising. It was probably the best way I could describe it. And I think that, you know, I don't really know the last time I felt like New England just wasn't in the game, you know, with that much game left to play.
I loved open book tests in school. I wish I had more of them. My GPA would have been better, probably. Did they just open up the book for everybody else, the Titans, moving forward on how to beat the Patriots or try to beat the Patriots? Before, all we talked about leading up to that game was nobody is willing to go after him. Everybody is going to stay back. Everybody's scared to go after Tom Brady because he will burn you. The Titans did none of that. They absolutely went after him and harassed him all day. Is this the open book test for everybody else moving forward?
Well, here's the thing. They would, you know, you're saying they went after him, but, you know, the number of times that they brought five or fewer guys, I think would surprise you. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I did a breakdown of, you know, the drive before the half, you know, that New England had. You know, the Titans have one defensive lineman on the field at the time, and they don't have a single guy with his hand on the ground. And on the first and second down plays to start that drive, they only bring four. Now, the four that they bring, you know, weren't the four that New England thought was coming. But, you know, so New England actually was in a seven-man protection twice to start that drive. And the Titans were only bringing four guys. Well, that means you have a three-man route with seven guys in coverage. So, you know, I think sometimes these numbers on like, oh, hey, they blitzed because Logan Ryan came, you know, that it's not necessarily, you know, totally indicative of, you know, actually bringing pressure. Does that make sense? You see what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. Yep.
Because of the person, because of the situation of the game, which was the time left on the clock in a drive right before the half, and the type of defense that you could have out on the field, and, you know, the personnel grouping and who you're bringing and, you know, who you are deciding is going to rush the passer on that play, you know, I think can skew these numbers sometimes where you're like, oh, yeah, well, they blitzed. It's like, well, they blitzed, but they only brought four people. So it's not like they blitzed and were playing man coverage and you know, they were just asking guys to cover all day long. I don't believe that to be the case. Now, I do think, and I'm pretty sure this probably has been documented fairly well, that, you know, Adoree Jackson did a nice job on the opportunities where, you know, he was asked to cover guys and be there and kind of, you know, step up, and he certainly did.
Man, you're wicked smart. Wicked smart you are. Tim?
I mean, wicked smart?
Wicked smart. I can't do it. I don't even try to do it. It's so bad.
You know what's interesting? It's like, so I'm curious why they do that. Like, so they after a game that they that the Patriots lose, they call down or they listen in to what to see, like, the level of excitement for beating the Patriots? Like,
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know how it works. I don't know if they do it every week or if it's just after a loss or if they just chose this game because of the uniqueness of it, where they're just not used to coming on Monday's airwaves and talking about a beatdown. And so maybe they just decided that they thought that Nashville would be euphoric and it would be just be there would be a parade and the show live, you know, downtown on Broadway.
Floats
during
going
a parade,
by.
Floats. Yeah. I don't know what they expected. My guess is that's what they expected and probably were disappointed that wasn't going on. I don't know.
You know, I think, you know, what's interesting is, you know, the talk radio up there, you know, in my opinion, from my experience in the past, is half of it is, you know, half of them are, you know, very pro-Patriots, you know, very, you know, Tom can do nothing wrong kind of mentality. But then there's another segment of it, and sometimes split in between the shows, where, you know, guys are really, really critical of either Brady or Belichick. You know, so for, you know, a team in a city that's enjoyed so much success, you know, it's surprisingly critical of the guys up there sometimes.
Now, I want to get your reaction to what Deion Lewis said after the victory over New England.
A real sweet win, you know, especially when you used to be there and they didn't want to bring you back. So definitely real sweet. I'm happy my teammates came out and played, and I love these guys.
So it is a little personal.
Hell yeah, it's personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your kicked.
I'm sure you had heard those comments many, many times through NFL Live and all your hits on ESPN. You've talked about them. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably one of those things that over the long haul he's going to regret, you know, saying, because he did have a nice career in New England. And I think that, you know, for the most part, I think if you would ask people up there, you know, they think highly of him. And so you do something like that now. Unfortunately, it, you know, in the long haul, it'll tarnish your reputation up there, which is probably not what Deion wants in the long run, even if he doesn't realize it now. But look, New England has basically, for a long period of time now, said we're going to play a bunch of guys at running back. It really doesn't make sense for us to really, really invest in the position. And I actually think it's the right philosophy, you know, at the position. I mean, they basically have done it with, you know, guys on very minimal contracts. And they've had a lot of success doing it that way. And so I think it's hard to fault them in, you know, in their method to it. And I think for Deion, to be honest with you, like what New England did was they showed the league what he is unbelievable at doing, which is, you know, running between the tackles better than people realize. And then nearly impossible to cover coming out of the backfield. So, like, even though he's going to make his money in New England, New England, you know, helped him make the money that he's making now. And so I think it's one of those things where I understand why he said it, but I think he'll regret saying it, you know, at some point.
We come back. We'll talk more about that, get a little thoughts on Indianapolis as well. I do want to ask why New England has made a history of exposing people, and Malcolm Butler has been exposed a lot this year, why we didn't see 21 frantically running down the field chasing someone. I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll touch on a bunch of other stuff with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN, on the other side. You're listening to Darren and Donch on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll have our silly underdog picks. That's coming up in the next hour. We normally do it on Thursdays, but Will and I will both be out tomorrow. So we're going to do it today
at 1
o'clock.
No Darren, no Donch.
No Darren, no Donch tomorrow or Friday. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN, is on the line with us. So I said going into the break that the Patriots have made a living out of exposing or finding your weaknesses and exposing them. Why didn't that happen on Sunday?
Well, I don't think that they particularly have a wide receiver group that is, you know, playing as well as I think people thought that it would be playing right now. I think that's part of it. And I think that the Titans did a good job of, you know, playing a fair amount of zone. You know, I mean, we talked about, you know, what people are calling blitzes and, you know, things of that nature, but, like, you know, they played a lot of zone in that game. And so I think that's part of it. I also think this in terms of Malcolm Butler, and I would put, you know, somebody like Marcus Peters in a similar category. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but what he does is he has, you know, good instincts. And one of the things that people will do with a guy that has good instincts is they'll say, hey, listen, like, trust your eyes. And, like, if you see it, like, jump it, which is why, you know, he makes the play that he makes in the Super Bowl. You know, and offensive guys will call it guessing, and, you know, defensive guys will call it, you know, breaking on the ball. But, you know, I think that what you've seen from Malcolm Butler is, like, he's willing to take chances and jump stuff. And I think that, you know, when you have guys that will try to sit on routes and try to gamble a little bit, people eventually try to use that against you. And I think that that's one of the things that's hurt him. And I think that's what has plagued a guy like Marcus Peters. And so I think that's really what's going on. I don't feel like he's a different player. I just think that, you know, the book starts to be written on you as a player, and people try to start to use your strengths against you. And I think that that's kind of what's happened to Malcolm Butler.
Tim, it seems like people try to write the book on Marcus Mariota after every game, whether it's good or bad. he comes out of the bye week, and to me, he looks like a healthy quarterback. Now, he ditched that protective glove on his right hand. He says he feels close to 100%. And to me, you're the quarterback here, but to me, I've seen some throws in the last couple weeks that look like a guy who can make all the throws, that whether that's health or confidence in the system or whatever. He looks like a different guy to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's always been able to make the throws. The question is, you know, does he make them consistently? And, you know, I think that's probably where, you know, it's, you know, probably fair to be, you know, somewhat critical of him in terms of how he's played. But, look, I would agree with you. I don't think there's any doubt that, and I think this is applied to him every year. You know, this year it's been the elbow and the ability to, you know, to really feel the ball and, you know, probably put it where you want to put it. You know, in years past, it's been the hamstring or the knee and, you know, affecting his mobility, affecting how much he's practicing during the week or whatever it is. And so I think it's probably easy to find a direct correlation to him playing well and him being healthy. And that's the case for a lot of guys. It's why I think every time I'm on with you guys, I talk about, you know, with how important it is for him to be healthy. So, you know, you just look at the throw he makes to Corey Davis for the touchdown that, you know, Corey makes a great play on it because of, you know, he's getting interfered with. There was a couple of other plays where, you know, you just saw him. It was, you know, subtle movements in the pocket rather than an eagerness to escape outside the pocket, which I think was a continuation of what we saw against Dallas on Monday night. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, everyone should be encouraged by it. But I think this, Steven, and it's just from the way you asked the question, it sounds like you would agree with me on this. I understand we're in, I guess, year four, right? We're in, yep, year four. You know, I understand the need to feel like you need an answer on is he a franchise quarterback or do you need to turn the page? But had he played poorly against Dallas and great against New England, like, it's just not fair to anybody to ride that roller coaster. I mean, just I think that what everyone has to do is go, you know what, look, here's the deal. Had Marcus Mariota been drafted first, we'd have Jameis Winston. That's who our quarterback would be. Would we be better off if that was the case, or are we better off with Marcus? And the reality is you'd be better off with Marcus. There's not a better option. And I think the idea now is, like, I think everyone just has to embrace the fact that this is your quarterback. This is what his skill set is. Try to build the best possible thing you can build around him and see how much he develops as a passer. Like, rather than, you know, him playing poorly and being like, no, we were wrong. He fooled us against New England and Dallas. To me, that wouldn't be any fun as a fan. I don't think it's a fair evaluation of a guy. Tom Brady played terrible. So should New England, should talk radio in New England right now be saying, you know what, we should have never traded Garoppolo. See, look what we got. Like, I just don't think that's the right way to look at the position.
Yeah, I agree with you. So now the Titans go up to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. Against the Patriots, they got a lot of man-to-man, some zero coverage in there, and obviously they carved it up. The Colts tend to sit back with a lot more zone, some Tampa 2 in there. How do you think Marcus Mariota and these wide receivers in particular match up against that compared to what we saw last weekend?
Well, I think from what you've seen from Corey Davis, I think that here's the deal. People will play man when they're trying to stop the run. I mean, that's one of the things you'll do. You try to play more man. And so, you know, when you get those opportunities, then, you know, it's obviously the, you know, the pick plays and crossing routes and things of that nature. Really, all of the guys should win them when you get that type of stuff. But, you know, if you're trying to look for big plays, I mean, that's when Corey Davis really needs to kind of start to take over and dominate. You know, in terms of, you know, playing zone or playing Tampa 2. Look, someone's going to play Tampa 2 against you. You need to be able to run the football. And if people are going to play Tampa 2 against the Titans, because of Marcus's ability as a runner, you should have all kinds of advantages trying to run the football against a team that is going to play with two high safeties. I mean, that should be a huge part of the plan. And then, you know, you're asking the quarterback to do a much better job with his eyes and do a much better job inside the pocket when you face zone coverage. And so whether it's a zone pressure or whether it's a team that's just going to rush four and play you know, play a more traditional zone. Like, that's, you know, that's what you're asked to do. So, you know, I do think that, and from talking to some people, I do think that, you know, we maybe minimized the Delanie Walker loss in that it was going to take some adjusting. And so I think, you know, after Delanie, you know, was injured, I think the team was trying to figure out, you know, the best use of their personnel to try, you know, you can't just say, okay, hey, Jonnu Smith, you're going to come in and assume that role. I think, you know, elements of Delanie's role, you know, are going to have to change and get picked up by other guys. And, you know, I think that they are starting to still try to navigate their way through that, but I think getting better at doing that. And so, yeah, I think that's part of the reason that they're playing better now.
You remember the storylines all through the summer and into training camp. It was, will Andrew Luck even be able to throw the ball? Will the shoulder be okay when he gets back to the season? Well, here he is with 26 touchdowns, 10 of them in the last 3 weeks against just an interception. His passer rating's been like 127 over the last three games. He's not getting sacked. Is this the best Andrew Luck has ever played?
I think that it's I think it's as well as he's ever played, but I think that he's playing differently. Like, nobody's talking about that. You're right about the numbers and, you know, it's amazing. But he's playing differently. Watch him run the ball. When he runs the football, he gives himself up way earlier than he ever did in the past. You know, there's a play on third down a couple weeks ago where he doesn't even make an effort to get the first down. It's clear he's been coached, like, that first down's not worth it. There was a red zone run, I believe, last week or the week prior. And he's got no intention of any type of contact. The ball is coming out so much quicker, and while they are still taking some shots down the field, it's not the same kind of design that we were, you know, seeing from the Colts in the past. It's a different offense. He's playing different, but I think it's smarter for the longevity of his career. I mean, it's clearly that. I think Frank Reich has done a tremendous job, you know, kind of coaching him into that. And obviously, you know, going through what he's gone through, I think it's probably been easier for Andrew to realize that he has to adjust. And I will say this, and it sounds crazy, but, you know, Jack Doyle is a, you know, he's an above average tight end. Eric Ebron is a massive problem for people. He is, you know, he's not Delanie Walker, but, you know, he's not that far from it. People are like, come on, that's crazy. He doesn't block like Delanie. He doesn't run. He's not, you know, he doesn't do a lot of things as well as Delanie does. But he is still a massive problem for people in the passing game because of his athleticism and, quite honestly, how he adjusts to the football and how fast he still runs. So that, to me, I think has helped the Colts quite a bit. And obviously their offensive line has gotten a lot of love. Part of that has been Andrew's been playing smarter, getting the ball out quicker, but they've just gotten better up front.
The game of the week should be the one-loss Chiefs, now at the one-loss Rams, the game moved from Mexico City. With those two offenses and those quarterbacks and those coaches, how excited are you to watch that, and who do you give the edge to?
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. Look, there's a lot that the Rams are going through right now, and I think I'm going to give the edge to the Chiefs in that they can really run the football. And I think I mentioned this to you guys a while back, but the Rams aren't stopping anybody from running the ball. And, you know, I think that's part of the thing that you get when you've got defensive tackles that are only concerned about sacks. They'll pick sides and they give up big runs. And I think that's one of the ways that you kind of slow down that offense is, you know, you're just able to hold the ball longer. So I actually like the Chiefs, and, you know, I think part of it's just the distraction of everything that the Rams are dealing with, and then, you know, Kansas City's ability to, you know, run the football.
Tim, as we wrap this up, we talked about it on Tuesday after the Monday night game because I was doing a Predators game in here, but I had the monitors on, and one of them on the televisions was on the Monday night football game, Giants and 49ers. I know people have been saying this all year, but I paid closer attention than most times. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but I am. Eli Manning's arm is awful. He is so – I mean, some of the passes, to see him miss that badly, like I knew it was out there, but just to watch, I mean, Odell Beckham split two defenders, and it looked like a college game. He had them beat so bad. He almost had to come to complete stop just to make an attempt to try to catch the ball. Any other quarterback that has an arm hits him in stride, and he could have crawled into the end zone. He threw a back shoulder. He threw
exactly
a back shoulder fade.
I know the play you're talking about. Here's what I would say on that play: it's a double move, and I think Odell races through his double move and just outruns Eli's arm. Eli's taking seven steps, a hitch, and throwing it. It's a long developing play. There are very few quarterbacks that are going to be able to reach Odell if he doesn't take his time on the double move. So Odell's going to outrun a lot of arms doing that. And so I think because he raced through his double move, that it made it look even worse. Look, I told you guys before, the Giants should have drafted a quarterback. Barkley's Barkley, and I get it. But, I think sometimes I'll just tell you what happened. Here's basically what happened. Dave Gettleman and the people at the Giants, have an affinity for Eli because he's done the right thing for the longest time, and he's brought a lot of success to that organization. And it is harder for them to turn the page than it is for, other people that don't have that same type of attachment to Eli. But he's just not the same player that he once was. He's 37 years old. He's going to be a year older next year, and they're just going to be in a similar situation where they need a quarterback. And he's played a really long time. And I think because we've seen guys play for so long, we think that everyone's going to play for so long.
Yeah.
But, look at Rob Gronkowski. He's played, I think this is year 10. 10 years at tight end that's a long time. A decade at tight end is a long time. It's like he's had three back surgeries and two arm surgeries and a big knee injury. And, it's a long time. Not everybody plays for 15 or 20 years. And I do think for Eli, it's run its course.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, and you're right. It's a lot easier from afar. It's not even judging him because I know he's had tons of success in what he's done and what he's meant. He does things the right way, but I mean, even that back shoulder pass, it almost got intercepted not by the guy defending the play. It was just so underthrown that it was almost intercepted from the guy just coming over to the play.
Listen,
I mean,
he almost misses Sterling Shepard on the game-winning touchdown.
Yes.
On a throw that's an easy throw.
It's just bad.
Right. Yeah. Look, he's been beat up there. Somebody said to me, and I don't know if I totally, totally agree with this, but I think there's elements. I don't know if it's one of the Rocky movies where it's the worst thing for a boxer is that he becomes civilized. Look, there's an element of playing the quarterback position of standing in there. Even with all these rule changes of protecting the quarterback, there's an element of standing in there when you're in your late 30s and you've made over $150 million playing a sport and you've got kids that you want to run around and play with. There's a different mentality of standing in the pocket at that point than there is when you're trying to prove to everybody that you're one of the best at the position. There just is. It's a fact. I saw it in my brother. I saw it. I've seen it in guys all the time. And it makes sense. Life changes. You're a different stage of life. And your motivation to stand in there and take it on the chin or get rolled up on is just, it's different. And I do think you see some of that in them.
This was wicked good. Again. You did it again. Good job.
Hey, that was a piss of segment, okay? That was a piss of segment.
Tim, have a great rest of your week. We'll do
by
it again
way,
next
by
week.
By the way, listen, I grew up there. I don't even know what piss I mean. I don't even know. I bet you they're going to have someone send this to them and send it up there.
Maybe so, next week Donch will be with us.
Yeah, let's get Donch on. Make sure he's on his best behavior.
We'll see you.
See you, Tim.
See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck. He's so good. Every Wednesday at noon. Back with more of Darren and Donch next. Before we get into the Titans and Colts, I was telling you I was looking at Wall Street Journal put the 10 best U.S. airports. Now, I don't know the criteria. They just have the list. And they had Denver number one. I do not understand that. I mean, it's a nice airport. It's just in another, it feels like you're in another state. It's like 45 minutes from downtown Denver.
You basically fly into, I guess it's Utah, not Nebraska, because it's to the west, but you basically fly into Utah and then have to drive into the town.
Yeah, so I was perplexed that they have Denver. Yeah. It's big and it's nice and it's new, but it's way out there. Orlando, number two.
Their security line to me is consistently the worst that I ever go through. And I'm TSA pre-check. It often doesn't help in Orlando.
Yeah. I've been to Orlando many, many times, the airport. It's not like I've ever gone away going, wow, that was great. They've got their number two. Phoenix is three. I've never had any issues with Phoenix. The one that's really, really stood out was fourth on the list. Remember, this is the best, not the worst. The best airports in the country. This is so incredibly laughable for me. And I think you're going to agree because we were kind of talking about it off air. But Atlanta as the fourth best.
No way.
I can honestly tell you I would have Atlanta last. The two airports in New York City and Atlanta are probably my worst.
I would put LaGuardia and JFK below Atlanta, but Atlanta's not good.
Some of the worst.
Charlotte has to be up there, like higher up there.
Charlotte
is
eight.
But Charlotte is a great airport.
Charlotte is great. Seattle, I've been to all these. Seattle, seven. Las Vegas is six. Dallas, Fort Worth is huge. I've never had any issues.
Las Vegas is great until you get in the taxi line.
Yeah.
And then you're in like the seventh circle of hell.
LA is nine. Boston's 10. But Atlanta, four. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Some of my worst experiences are in Atlanta's airport. I don't know how. Like I said, I don't know the criteria.
My
fourth
two longest,
best.
Yeah, my two longest delays ever of just being stuck in an airport, both times were in Atlanta.
No doubt. Like, I have no good experiences. JFK, LaGuardia, no good experiences. Those three would be my lowest ranked.
Only time you ever want to go to Newark is to avoid JFK and LaGuardia.
True. I've done Newark many times.
You know, you don't want to go there, but if you're avoiding those two airports, it's worth it.
Yeah. So Nashville, not on the list.
I love our airport.
Yeah.
I think our airport's great.
I mean, it's just,
I wish it was a little bigger sometimes and we had a few more options at it, and I think that's growing all the time. But in terms of actually going in the airport and the experience you have, love it.
Now, Tim Hasselbeck, we played the audio from Deion Lewis after the win over the Patriots, and he was asked, you know, when he was going down the road, it was very clear that this was personal, and then he was given the follow-up question, was this game personal? And he was like, well, heck yeah, it was personal. And then he went on to make the comment about, you know, that's what you get for being cheap. You get your butt kicked.
Mm-hmm.
Well, evidently, Deion Lewis has – and Tim Hasselbeck said that – you know, he laid it out perfectly, but in the end, he said he probably thinks that Deion Lewis will regret saying that because, look, while we're, like, here enjoying it and you like that, you get caught up and it's like, hell yeah.
Sure.
But it is kind of hard to poke fun or poke at the system that has worked almost flawlessly for 18 years for New England. This is what they do, and guess what? They've been to eight Super Bowls, and they've won five of them, and they've had – They win double-digit games every year, and what is their MO? What is their approach to everything? They're not going to overpay anybody. They're just not, and they'll find somebody else. They're just not going to overpay. And so many times they've been ripped. How could you let this person go? How could you trade this person away? Remember when they traded the offensive lineman to Tampa? And, I mean, the freak-out mode was oh, my goodness. How could you trade him? Was it Mankins?
Yep.
How could you trade him to the Bucks?
He was one of the best in the league.
He's the best ever! They won the Super Bowl. Nobody's brought it up since. They went on and had another big year. They win the Super Bowl. And all that goes away. But that's what they do. So it's kind of...
The only person that's proven to be irreplaceable is Brady.
If you want to say they got their butt kicked for a game?
Sure.
Sure. But to say that that's what happens, like, hey... This you reap what you sow. This is going to get you.
They've changed what they've done over 15 years, and you're the first guy that they've gone cheap.
Yeah, with all due respect, Everybody likes Deion Lewis. He's a great guy to talk to. He's been fabulous addition to this roster, but I don't believe that that is going to be the tipping point for the New England Patriots, that not signing Deion Lewis is going to send them spiraling down, you know, downward. I guess Deion Lewis today responded to what he said on Sunday. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, man, I'm a feisty guy.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this. I have to be that way. I'm 5'7". So I have to carry my head for a chip. So that's just how I am. That's how what's gotten me to where I am. Just not a person. That's just the type of person I am, the player I am.
So there you go. He has a chip on his shoulder, and that's how he's made it through his career. I mean, that's how he's made this work. He's a little guy, and he's had a chip on his shoulder. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's basically I got caught up in the moment. I play with a chip on my shoulder. It carried over into the locker room, and after the game, I was caught up in it. We just kicked their tail. You know, I had a good game against my former team. They didn't want to pay me. This team did, and we just showed them. I get all that, but today it's already he's starting to – you could tell this week he's reflected upon what he said. And my guess is down the road, whether it's publicly or not, privately he's going to be like, I probably shouldn't have said that.
I wonder if Vrabel pulled him aside like he did with Kevin Byard after
the Star
thing. I don't
know. I thought about that too.
Because here's the thing. I agree with everything Tim Hasselbeck said, that someday he's going to go back to New England – for a reunion, for a Super Bowl championship team, or for an honoring at midfield or whatever. And this is going to ride with him. The fact that he said these words, people in New England will remember to go along with the fact that he helped them win a Super Bowl. And I don't think he wants to live with that down the road. So for that reason, I get everything Tim said. From someone who follows the Titans, I view this differently than what Tim said and what Vrabel did with Kevin Byard. This team for so long has lacked the swagger and has lacked the guys who get emotional about stuff and want to go out there and kick the other team's tail, that I think the play Kevin Byard made in the end zone, the play itself, but then frankly also the swagger he had to go stomp on the star may be the turning point in the season for the Tennessee Titans.
But the New England doesn't
because
do
of how
that.
They
That's
up.
Probably what Vrabel's saying. Like,
sure.
I lived in that culture for a decade. They don't need to stomp on stars. They don't need to make comments after the game. They don't need to do this. They just go out there and take care of business.
But this isn't there. We've never been there. We've never won anything. At some point, you have to put your foot down and say, we're going to get over the top and we're going to do it. And I think Kevin Byard's play and even the celebration afterwards, as much as Vrabel hates it, I think said, as he said after the game, we're here. We're here to play. We're here to win. And we're going to do it. And guess what? The team responded to him. The Lewis comments are slightly different, but the swagger comes from the same place. He plays with that chip and that swagger, and I think that's great for the Titans.
Wouldn't you admit that Jalen Ramsey plays with swagger?
He does, and he made that defense what it was last year.
And how's
he's a distraction
all the
now.
Swagger in the offseason and all the swagger from Jalen Ramsey? Here's the problem. This is probably the way Mike Vrabel is looking at it. What you do, then what it does is it blows up in your face. Like it's blowing up in Jalen Ramsey's face. All that swagger, he's a Nashvillian. He just showed up to a Predators game and got booed on the Jumbotron.
Sure.
Okay, I realize he wants the attention and the attention he's getting. But does Jalen Ramsey need to talk to show everybody he's good?
Not at all.
Is he good without talking? And I'm not saying he has to be a mute. I'm not saying he doesn't have to say anything like Marvin Harrison his entire career, who never said anything, did not speak. I'm not saying you have to be that, but does Jalen Ramsey need to talk or to thump his chest or to pound a star or say anything to get attention or for people to say he's good? The answer is no. I think probably for me, I get what you're saying. I do. Because, look, to be real honest, for two guys that cover the team, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
We sit here
it's
all
way
day,
more interesting.
20 hours a week, and we got to talk about – it's great. I mean, it's stuff to talk about. It's content. That's fantastic. But I think from the perspective of Mike Vrabel, he is trying desperately to create a culture where it's just about business at hand. It's just like it's just like his comments. If you are celebrating, if basically you are the baseball team with the goggles and you're spraying each other in the locker room after a big win, then you haven't arrived. You don't understand winning because you're supposed to do that every week and you're not supposed to celebrate big victories. I know that's what he's trying to say, look, this is supposed to be your makeup. This is supposed to be your culture. You're supposed to show up every Sunday, punch the clock, and 3 hours, 3.5 hours later, you're supposed to just, you know, expect a victory. So expect to be talking about a win. So I get all that. And the way I look at it is, to me, it creates more harm than anything, even though it's great for what we do. But this is the prime example. If they lose the next three, what's the butt of every joke everywhere else?
It's the same thing it was when Taylor Lewan said we need more respect.
That's exactly where I was going. The minute Taylor Lewan said, we're like, yeah! Everybody's like, yeah! Pumped. And then when you lose your next three, what was everybody saying? And then when you win again, it's like, I hope Taylor Lewan's not going to say that again. Hope no players are going to be saying, hey, why aren't you talking about us again, right? Because immediately you'd go just the opposite way of, yeah, that was really cool when it happened. And then 3 games later or a month later, everybody's going, please don't do that again. Please don't do that again. So in the end, is it really worth it? Because the minute it's easier in New England to get away with it, and they don't do it because all they do is win, year in and year out. A bad year is 11-5. That's like a bad year in New England. What happened? Are they as good as they've been in the past? Like 11-5, which we would sign up for year in and year out. So you could even get away with it there because they're always good. They're basically good for 13 wins a year, but they don't do it. And I think that's what Vrabel is trying to – that's the culture he wants. Because you don't need to tell people you're good. You just go do it. Jalen Ramsey doesn't need to tell people he's good. We already know it. But he makes a point to tell everybody how good he is. And then when you sit there and you're 3-6 and you've lost 5 in a row, you become the butt of every joke. You become the attention for all the other reasons where everybody goes, yeah, why aren't you flapping your gums now? What? Tell us how great you are and how great your defense is. And, oh, where are you going? You guys going to win the Super Bowl this year? You going to get back there again this year? What? I don't hear anything. What? Because that's what happens. And now Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin and people down in Jacksonville are having to deal with all that. And I'm sure that's what they're talking about. Because when you talk and you don't back it up, it immediately comes back at you. And I think that's what Vrabel's trying to do. I don't mind it. Because, like I said, we get to talk about it. We get to play the clips, and we think it's cute, and it's gotten tons of run nationally.
Sure.
Tons of run. But if you don't follow it up, as we've talked about today already, right? This is the second time we've been to this point this season where everything feels great. Everything feels great. Are we going to step in it this week again, like the first go-around? That's what we're all trying to figure out. Is Monday's show going to be, what happened? Are you kidding me? They freaking lost to the Colts again. They freaking lost to Andrew Luck again. They didn't beat him again. Is that going to be Monday's show? Or is Monday's show going to be, wow, win this week against the Texans? You're in the division lead.
Driver's seat.
You're in the driver's seat. You own the tiebreakers. You will win every tiebreaker. The division is now yours for the taking. I hope it's that discussion, but I don't know what Monday's going to be. Can you say emphatically what Monday's going to be? I can't.
Absolutely not. That's where the intrigue is. The bottom line is this team has to go out there and do it. I do think there comes a point when you start winning, when you win as much as New England, you shut up because you've been there before. I think when you're trying to get there, a level of that swagger that didn't exist before is okay. Jalen Ramsey crossed the line this year because he started talking before they won anything this year, continuing off of last year, and now it's catching up with him. If the Titans win this weekend, I hope they don't say a word. Just shake each other's hands and move on to the next game. But at that point when they were struggling, I think that level of swagger was big for this team to get its mojo back. They've got it now.
But how do you turn it off and on like a light switch? How do you say, we got swagger this week, but hey, let's not have swagger this week?
Well,
like either you have it or you don't, right? What are you?
I think you can be selective with it.
Can you?
I think you can.
Selective swagger?
There's a swagger to playing on the field, and then there's a swagger to opening your mouth in a press conference or stomping on the other team's logo. I think you cannot. Kevin Byard's played with swagger his entire career and not stomped on anybody else's logo. I think he can avoid that from this point on, but at that particular moment, it was what this team needed, I think.
We kick off the fourth and final hour on this rainy Wednesday with silly underdog picks. That's next.